House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology, March 13th, 2007, in Hearing Room E at 1 p.m.
I'm going to call the this session of the House Committee on Government Affairs and Information Technology to order. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2702. Patrick, would you give us a quick rundown on the bill?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2702 requires state agencies to ensure that written documents presented on paper or through electronic media conform to plain language standards. There's additional details on that in the background of the measure. Also, I will let you know, beneath the staff measure summary, you'll find the Dash 1 amendments. Those restrict the scope of the measure to executive branch agencies and change the requirement that each agency assign one person to lead the initiative to have at least one person do so. It also clarifies that only agency personnel involved in preparing written or electronic documents for the public need to be trained in public plain language standards, and it also clarifies that the measure does not apply to administrative rules.
Thank you. I see Representative Bonamici is here. If you would come forward and give us your testimony, please. Thank you for coming. I know you have a busy schedule, and we appreciate you being here.
Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Representative Suzanne Bonamici, and I represent House District 34, which is in Washington County. I do have something to pass out here. I'm here in support of House Bill 2702. I am one of the co-sponsors of this important bill. I did read the Oregonian article today in the paper, and I would like to address the committee as somebody who has training as a lawyer. I would like to dispel the notion that all lawyers write and speak in what the article called bureaucraties. In fact, one of my favorite books, as I was going through law school, I just passed out the cover there for you, is called Plain English for Lawyers. And it's an excellent book that encourages lawyers to write plainly and simply as the intent of this bill. I agree with our good chair here and the sponsor of the bill that this will indeed save taxpayers money, and it will also, I believe, save a lot of aggravation among Oregonians and possibly cut back on mistakes that people make in interpreting their rights and responsibilities under the Oregon laws. I finally hope that this bill will address a pet peeve of mine, which is the multisyllabic utilize or utilization when a plain and simple use or use will usually do. Thank you so much for the opportunity to encourage your support of this important bill, House Bill 2702. As also a vice chair and member of the Consumer Protection Committee, I believe that this is a great bill for consumers and will help them understand their rights and responsibilities. And I urge your support of this bill, and I'd be happy to plainly and simply answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Yes. Representative Bonamici, I want to go along with what you say on 2702. I'm two co-sponsor on this bill, and really what brings it to highlight was in Consumer Affairs yesterday where I still have no clue what the bill says. And I was kind of hoping that the legislative process would adopt this too, so I understand that we're going to restrict it to the executive branch, but do you have any opinions about how we could write statute better here?
Chair Riley, Representative Gerard, members of the committee, yes, I do, and I am happy at this point to volunteer that I'm more than willing to donate a copy of Plain English for Lawyers to the Office of Legislative Counsel. I know that they are doing their best. There are, of course, times when statutes need to be drafted in a way that the layperson might think is unwieldy to make sure that everything is covered, but I think there are improvements that can be made in that regard.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Representative Bonamici.
Thank
I appreciate you,
Chair,
being
members
here.
Of the committee.
Senator Walker, I see you entered the room. Would you care to join us at the podium and share your comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. And I don't normally go around the building and testify on bills that I co-sponsor just because I think the public needs more time to talk than us legislators. But I absolutely love this bill. When it came across my desk for signature, I just went out of my chair because I think this is a fun bill. It's so simple, yet means so much to a lot of people. And we had a specific case in my office that I'll illustrate to you if I might. We had someone who had entered into a payment arrangement with the Department of Revenue, the Oregon Department of Revenue. And she said, you know, we have an outstanding balance of $1,200, and I've set up a payment plan with them to repay it. I've made at least two payments, neither of which were late. The other day, both my husband and I received a, quote, distraint warrant document in the mail. It looks like a form letter, but it states that it is a warrant. Under the words writ of execution, it says that the warrant, once recorded at the county clerk lien record, that they will have judgments against us and a lien on our property that they see fit to take. This will occur 60 days after the date of the notice. I have my phone off, I thought. It is off, but it still buzzes. This surprised me, as you can imagine. I had set up a payment schedule in good faith to repay what I owe, and to receive something this threatening and over the top for this amount of money upset me as well as my husband. I called the agent assigned to me, whose name, according to the warrant, was, I'll leave it blank, she was in training. So I called the main number and was put in touch with another agent. I was told there was nothing to this document. This was something that was automatically issued to people. But this did nothing to placate me. In fact, it caused me to become more upset. Why use a strong-arm tactic on someone who is paying you back what is owed? And why say there is an officer of the law coming to my home to take my property when that is not the case? So I hauled in the Department of Revenue into my office, and I said, why are you doing this? Why do you have to be so strong-armed? And it did. It said distraint warrant all over the top of it, writ of execution. So we talked about it, and I said, well, for legal reasons, we have to say that because we actually can warrant against their property if they fail to pay. And I said, but you don't even recognize anywhere on this warrant that they have entered into negotiations and arrangements to pay the bill. You say nothing about that. You simply say, we're going to go after your property and take your home because we have a right to do that. Excuse me. So I worked with the department, and they put in some language that was better, but not quite as good as I would like, and I'm hoping that with this passage of this bill, it might be better. But it's less onerous. It does indicate that, you know, you have entered into it. It says here, if you are making payments under a payment plan, this warrant does not change the terms of your plan. Continue with your payments as agreed. It was pretty simple. But it scared the heck out of my constituents, and there was no need for that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And as you may have heard or will hear, several states are making these changes. Washington State did it by executive order. They found that their collection of taxes tripled when they changed the language. Imagine, I think they collected $800,000 in just a short amount of time. If we could do that in Oregon by simply making the language on our documents more plain, that's a lot easier than doing it the hard way. So, Mr. Chair, I applaud you for bringing this bill forward. I very much hope it gets to my side of the building so that we can move forward on it. If we don't, we can always pressure the governor's office for an executive order. It appears that other states are doing the same. But I just think that we need to have a friendlier state government that's more easily interactable with our constituency, because we don't always understand the language. And you may know that I'm a court reporter, and I've been a court reporter for 24 years in U.S. Bankruptcy Court, and we recently had a case where the judge was saying something to the woman, and I can't remember the exact words, but it pretty much indicated that she won the case. But she's representing herself, and she said, "I'm sorry, I don't know what you just said to me." And he said, "You won your case." And she said, "Well, why didn't you just say that?" And so that is yet another example of how we get into our nomenclature and we just forget that people don't understand the words that we use, and it would just be easier to speak plain English. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Senator. I really appreciate you being here. With our amendment we have today, this will only apply to the executive branch. However, I'm hoping that 2 years from now we'll say, look, see how good this worked, and we'll move it to our branch and the judicial branch as well. Any questions for the Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And sometimes you just have to take baby steps until people figure out that the change is a good thing, because change is very scary.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Then we have from Washington, the Office of the Governor, Dana Howard. Well, I'm sorry.
Botka.
Thank you. If you would give us your testimony. We appreciate you coming all the way down from Olympia.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Riley and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me to be here at this hearing. I'm honored and pleased to be here. This is one of my favorite causes.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Dana Howard Botka. I live in Olympia, Washington, where I work as the Plain Talk Coordinator for the Office of the Governor. I'm also Manager of Customer Communications for the Department of Labor and Industries, and that is the agency in Washington that administers the workers' compensation program. The perspective I bring to this discussion is that I'm a plain language expert. I design documents, and I also test documents for their usability or their readability with actual customers, which is a key part of the plain language process. I would say that since the order was, since the executive order that Chris Gregoire passed in March of 2005 was passed, a lot of activity has been taking place in the state of Washington. But it really started about maybe 5 years ago. A few of our smaller agencies started plain language projects, and it really kind of took off. People took a great interest in it. So I wanted to take this opportunity just to show you a few examples and let you know how it's going in Washington. To take a moment to describe what Plain Talk is, it's really just a plain, it's the name we give for our plain language program. And just thinking about the tasks we ask our state, our citizens and businesses to do, we ask them to read and understand regulations. We ask them to pay taxes and fees. We ask them to vote. And they have to show that they're qualified to perform a particular service, as an electrician does. And in Washington, we just feel that it's our responsibility to be really clear about what those things are. It's our duty as government. But more than writing clearly, what we found in Washington is that the Plain Talk folks who are working on these projects, before they ever set their fingers to the keyboard, have to really think about who that customer is, who they're writing to, and what they need to understand, and what the language it is that they speak. I wanted to show you just an example so everybody can see an example of a Plain Talk rewrite. I often use, and it's interesting that we just spoke about warrants, because warrant has another definition, and that is it's a check drawn on the state treasury, at least in Washington. And in this case, warrant was referring to a benefit check. And this is a check. This is the letter we used to send out to folks who received pension checks or disability checks from the Department of Labor and Industries. But we didn't have any record that they'd actually cashed their check. And so we would send them a letter saying, "We've been notified that you did not receive the state of Washington warrant
And you can imagine what happened to our hotline when people received this letter. It really lit up. So we went in and we rewrote the letter. Now it just simply says, have you cashed your L&I check yet? The state treasurer's office has informed us that the check we sent you hasn't been cashed. And so that's just an example of what we're doing with plain language. It just makes it a lot easier. People ask me sometimes why I'm dumbing down the language in Washington State, and it's this plain language movement is not for folks, only for folks who have trouble reading or folks who are learning English as a second language, and that's an important part of it. But it's really for all of us because we're all inundated with way too much information that has way too much bureaucraties and legalese. And we don't want to undertake a research project just to be able to get a driver's license or to fill out a form or find out what our benefits are. I have one more example. And I think you have a longer example of this before you as it happens. This was a rewrite of a citation that we have at the Department of Labor and Industries because we inspect workplaces for safety hazards. And if an employer has a safety hazard and we ask them to fix it, we give them a citation, we give them their appeal rights. And it's very important for the business to know that they only have 15 days to appeal or they lose their right to appeal our decision. And so we rewrote the whole citation. This is just a little part of it that we did over. And you can see that in the first example, I mean, we're repeating information, we're using capital letters as we love to do in government, and we are not being terribly clear about what it is we want the employer to do. And I think that the translation makes it pretty clear, I hope. I also found out that I haven't done an official measurement of how this has affected the agency, but our inspectors love it because they're not getting the questions they used to get about the appeal rights. And I think you have the full page of what our appeal rights used to look like. They're in about 8-point type. Right now in Washington, we have 37 executive agencies or cabinet agencies with active plain language projects. The executive order went in at March 2005. There was a lot of activity. About 6 months ago, the Office of the Governor asked me to sort of organize the activity, keep track of what we were doing, organize all of the leads from each agency, and it's been great. I just asked them for a progress report March 1st. I sent them a very plain request for a progress report, and most of them replied on time. I found that about 3,000 state employees in Washington have attended plain language training through our Department of Personnel, which has responded wonderfully to the executive order. They've adapted some of our writing classes to include plain language principles in addition to good grammar and basic writing techniques. We have either completed or projects underway to rewrite about 1,000 form letters in Washington. I noticed we have about 300 forms either redone or underway, and about 3,000 web pages. And we also have a number of agencies that, like our agency, completely overhauled their websites using plain language principles and also other techniques you can use for making the website easier to use and understand. Our priority with the Plain Talk project has been outside customers. There's a lot of work we could do on administrative rules, on how we write RCWs, on internal communications, but our priority is the form that we ask the customer to fill out in the waiting room of our state agency or the form letter we send to their mailbox or the web page that they use a lot. That's been our priority. Most plain language projects in the country and around the world have not been measured for performance, but we're really going to try to do that in Washington. We have some pilot projects set up where we're going to try to figure out if we can save money, if we can save phone calls, if we can save time, just by changing the language of the document. And we've started to do that. We have some good examples so far. I think that the reason there isn't a lot of performance measurement is that so many people agree this is just common sense, and this is civility, and this is how we want to communicate with citizens. It's the right thing to do. I wanted to show you a copy of a letter that has been measured and is kind of a
a great example I wanted to show you. It is in Professor Kimball's testimony, I noticed. He mentioned it, too, because this is an example of a letter that was measured for performance. It was a letter that used to be issued by the U.S. Veterans Administration in Jacksonville, Mississippi. And they used to send out this letter, they've told us, about 750 times a year to veterans who were applying for pensions. And they did a benchmark measure of this letter, which basically says these are the steps you need to go to apply for your pension. And it, basically they're telling them to go to their doctor. They sent it out 750 times a year, but the phone calls they got on this letter were tremendous. They would get about 1,100 phone calls per year just because of this one letter. So more phone calls than they sent letters out. They asked a plain language expert to come and help them revise it. And you can see it's a great example of what you can do with information. The plain language expert worked with the Veterans Administration, and they broke up the information. They put bulleted headings. They made it scannable. They simplified the language, as you can see. And the details were confined to a brochure about privacy rights and legal rights and obligations that was enclosed with the letter, so that the page was opened up and you could see it more clearly. What happened after in the next year was that they sent 710 of these letters out, and the phone calls dropped dramatically. They got 192 phone calls in the year. So the phone calls were about a tenth of what they were. And that's a great example. I wanted to show you one that I'm working on right now, if we have time.
Sure.
Do we have time?
Absolutely.
The reason you can't see it very well is because you can't see it very well in paper form either. In Washington, the Department of Labor and Industries collects workers' compensation premiums from all employers, 170,000 of them. And in each quarter, we ask them to, we give them the rates on their form, which is on the other side of this instruction sheet here. We ask them to fill out the number of hours their workers have worked, and then they are supposed to figure out their premium and send us the money. And these are the instructions we currently have on the back of that really important form. And as you can see, we get a lot of phone calls about this form. So one of my Plain Talk for Small Business projects was to work with the staff to try to create a set of instructions that would really help our employers figure out how to fill out this form and pay their bill. Because we get thousands of calls from employers every quarter who cannot fill it out. They can't understand how to fill it out. So I worked with staff, and as you can see, we just completely changed the way we presented the information. And some of it is very graphically presented. We actually took a little snapshot of the other side of the form and put it there. And you can see the steps are numbered, which people tend to like. I did a usability test with a number of people trying to fill out this form using the old instructions. And then I did another test with a number of people trying to fill out the form with the new instructions. And I found that with the old instructions, only about 30% of the people I tested could fill it out correctly. When I used these instructions, it went up to about 65%. And we're still improving it, but it just made a big difference. And the great thing is that when I showed this to the program, they were really excited, and they wanted to just do the whole form over, as well as some other forms they were using. Earlier it was mentioned that Department of Revenue really had some great success with a rewrite of a letter that asked all employers in Washington to pay a voluntary use tax. That's a tax if you are, say, in Washington, you come down to Oregon and you buy something for your business, you're really required to go back to Washington and pay your sales tax. But it's voluntary and you have to report it. They tried with one letter that wasn't very clear to get people to pay this tax, and they found that only 3% of the people paid their tax or responded in any way to this notice. They had a plain language expert come in, rewrote the letter. They found that that 43% either responded or paid the tax, and while they were expecting to get about $1 million, $1.2 million from this one rewrite of a letter, they got $2 million in 1 year from just rewriting this one letter, which is really a great measure. So what did all these projects have in common? We researched the customers' needs. We figured out who these customers are, what their needs are, and what information they needed. If you give them lots of information, they won't pay attention to any of it. They're all shorter, very simple, straightforward, and they're easy to see on the page. People ask me a lot what the cost is. We have never had a legislative any funding for a Plain Talk project. These are all projects done with existing budgets. The biggest thing is the training fee. It's a $99 to send an employee down to our Plain Talk training with the Department of Personnel. Some agencies have asked for funding to rewrite rules. We have done that, and to redo websites. But just the plain everyday rewrite of documents and forms, we have not asked for any budget money. One of the most important things I'd like to say is that if you pursue this, it's going to be very interesting for you, because I find that when I work with folks on these plain language projects, we do get better documents. We get customers who are happier. Sometimes we get great results. But what is happening in my agency, and we've been doing this for about 5 years now, is that there's a real change in the culture. Plain talk has become a verb. And so people will come to me and say, could you plain talk this document? I understand that that's important now. And slowly there's been a change of culture where people from programs will sit down and rewrite forms with me, or form letters. And in the process of rewriting a form letter or a form with a manager, the managers begin to see what we're actually asking citizens to do, which in some cases can be completely ridiculous. We used to have a renewal form for electricians that asked them to have their renewal form notarized before they enclosed it, put it in an envelope with their annual payment. And when the manager sat down and looked at the instructions, they said, well, why are we doing that? And so that was one of my gratifying moments, change those forms. Finally, what our advice to Oregon is, it's great to get the message from the top. If this is law, it is great, because this work is not easy. You have to take baby steps. You have to work really hard. You have to think about what you're saying. I also recommend that you have agencies take small steps, small measurable steps, so that they can gradually get used to it and gradually spread the word about how it works and publicize it. I'd work with the state attorneys, because a lot of these documents have legal implications, and you need to find attorneys who understand this process. There are many classes they can go to now in plain legal writing, and it's great to have them on board at the beginning of projects. And finally, your best resource in this effort is to listen to your customer service folks. There's some sort of a gap between customer service people and answering the phone or sitting on the front desk and our managers, and they have a wealth of information about what our customers do understand. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dana, and I appreciate you coming all the way down and helping us out with this. I notice we have the governor's office in the back of the room taking notes, so this is good. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for coming down. And I'm sure that as a Washington employer, I employ people in Washington, I contributed greatly to the phone calls, I'm sure, to your L&I office filling out the forms. It's quite different than Oregon. But I just, the $99 training fee, now who actually does the training? Is it in-house? Do you hire a consultant?
Well, that's a good question. We have a Department of Personnel which provides many different types of trainings for state employees. And so they have about 3 or 4 different plain language writing classes which they offer to state employees. Some agencies have created their own in-house plain language training. And so they will develop it themselves, and they will teach their own employees. 2 of our agencies have online training, so they can kind of get the message across over the online to their employees. And some of agencies have hired consultants to come in and create specific trainings for the agency.
I guess maybe a follow-up on that.
Follow-up, please.
I guess what does the $99 training fee come from? I mean, if they're all so different, how can you, is that just an average?
The $99 is what the Department of Personnel charges.
I see.
If you go that route.
I see.
Representative Byers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming. Was there much pushback when you started this, or were people pretty receptive to going this direction?
When I personally started working on it in the year 2000, I was backed by an agency director who was very interested in it. So that really helped. As the months and years went on, I've encountered a great deal of pushback. It depends on the program. It depends on the personalities in the programs. It really does. But yeah, I've had a lot of battles. I've been laughed out of the room. But it's changed.
Thank you.
Representative Thatcher, another question?
Yes, thank you. Love this idea. I think it's wonderful. I think it's fantastic. And I'm just wondering, are you able to, I think we all agree, yeah, it costs a little money up front. Have you been able to, besides certain examples where people actually start paying their taxes, their voluntary excise taxes, do you have examples of how much money it's saving overall? I mean, can you document it? Are you able to show that?
That is my number one priority in this new position I have with the Office of the Governor. And because it is hard to get everybody to measure.
Love this idea. I think it's wonderful. I think it's fantastic. And I'm just wondering, are you able to, I think we all agree, yeah, it costs a little money up front. But have you been able to, besides certain examples where people actually start paying their taxes, their voluntary excise taxes, do you have examples of how much money it's saving overall? I mean, can you document it? Are you able to show that?
That is my number one priority in this new position I have with the Office of the Governor. And because it is hard to get everybody to measure success because it takes a lot of staff time, what we've decided to do is to look at maybe four or five promising projects in the agencies, even have the agencies volunteer and, you know, sign up to be a pilot project, and measure performance. And we're getting help from the analysts in the Office of the Governor, and in our Office of Financial Management, we have analysts who are willing to help us with that. So we can at least have some solid measures on maybe four or five projects. Because it's really important to do that. But it's not always possible. Sometimes you can, for example, I was just looking at a rewrite from our Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission. And they were really proud that they'd rewritten a request to bring it to utilities to on time send their annual report and annual fee. Well, they'd rewritten it, but they had also made it clear that they did have to pay the fee and made it clear that there was a penalty if they didn't have the fee. And so those factors changed it. So it wasn't just the language that had been changed. And so sometimes it's hard to get exact measures. And that's just one example of what can happen.
I have one question myself. Is there any evidence that this your exercise in Washington, the plain talk, has saved your businesses in the state any money or any time? Is that anything that you feel has happened?
So far? I would say that at this point, because it's relatively new, that the evidence is going to be anecdotal. I mean, businesses are going to tell us, yes, it saved me time, it didn't take me as much time to fill out the form. But we don't accept in those, the example I gave you of the Department of Revenue,
mm-hmm.
We don't have a lot of measures yet. That's really important for us to get that set up.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Dana. I really appreciate you coming down.
Okay.
Cindy Helvington? Would you... Do you have some other folks with you?
No.
Okay, great. if you would state your name for the record and then go ahead and give us your testimony.
My name is Cindy Albington. I'm from Springfield, Oregon, 97477. And I'm here today to talk to you about HB 2702, the plain language bill. I'm in support of HB 2702, plain language bill, because people who have disabilities need to be involved with the legislation process, government meetings, and other programs and trainings. I'm on a lot of committees myself, and I try to keep up with the other people who are on the committee, and it's really hard to keep understanding what they're saying and stuff. And I'm always asking questions, and it's holding up the meeting, and it's not really fair for the other people stopping and trying to explain what Dane said. And if plain language was used, I would be able to understand it, the materials, and without holding up the meetings. People with and without disabilities can be on the same page and help each other. People without disabilities can also benefit from HB 2702 and from having information written in plain and simple language. A lot of Oregon citizens have trouble reading difficult information. This bill would make it easier for everyone to be involved in the legislative process. Thanks for listening to me today.
Thank you, Cindy. Any questions? Yes, Representative Byer.
Well, I don't really have a question. I thank you for being here. This is one of my favorite constituents.
I can see why.
Yes, and supporting the bill. I think you're right. I think it would just be helpful for everybody to be able to do this. Thank you,
Representative Thatcher.
Not so much a question, but just to say, if you've got questions, keep asking the questions. Because odds are somebody else has the same question. So thank you for sharing your testimony.
Thank you, Cindy. Patrick Allen.
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Allen. I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. Wanted to testify on behalf of state agencies generally regarding House Bill 2702. First, and overall, plain language publications and materials are without question the right thing to do. As you know and as you've heard, when one of the questions I get most frequently is, just tell me what I have to do to comply, and I'm happy to do it. When people know what it is they have to do, whether it's filling out a form, responding to a letter, applying for a benefit, anything like that, complying with the regulation, when they know what they have to do, they tend to do those things. That's why at the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, we've been working for the last 4 years with agencies on how to make regulations themselves simpler, cheaper, easier to understand, easier to comply with, and I came and talked to you at the very beginning of the session about some of the results of that. Just as an aside, Dana Howard-Botka mentioned notarization. That was one of our issues last session. Several of you voted on a bill that eliminated a whole scad of notarization requirements that weren't serving any particular purpose and were requiring extra steps and costs and those kinds of things, and so we've been heading down that path. As a part of that, we had begun actually working with Department of Administrative Services in January on designing what a plain language initiative would look like. And so your proposal is timely, and I think would be immeasurably helpful in us getting this issue and this important work done. Second thing I wanted to say quickly is appreciation for your willingness, Chair Riley, to look at to request the Dash One amendments that I think will take care of some technical issues that will make implementation of the bill a little smoother, and there are a couple of them I want to mention just to get that on the record. Exempting administrative rules, at least at this stage, I think will be useful for a couple of reasons. A lot of administrative rules, although certainly not all, are technical in nature, or they're dictated by federal law, or they implement some kind of a national standard that's negotiated, and it would be awfully difficult in the time constraints we have to try to sit down and separate out which ones are which. Let me give you an example. The state building code is a case in point. Much, although not all, of the code consists of technical standards for construction. Users of those kinds of technical codes are engineers and architects who design buildings and need to know what the actual technical standards are to go out and build something. Not everything in the code is. I think there's an example in the Oregonian today of something having to do with postings and signs and those kinds of things that aren't necessarily. But again, trying to sort out, you know, which is which in the time that we have to work through the legislative session, I think would be difficult. And there's a lot of valuable work that we can do short of getting to administrative rules. The second piece about administrative rules is they aren't really necessarily the low-hanging fruit in the system. If you really think about it, do you want a citizen to go over to their shelf full of Oregon administrative rules and pick the book off the shelf and look at the administrative rule to figure out what it is they should do? Lots of times, and in fact I'd say most of the time not. You want them looking at websites, publications, brochures, letters that they receive, those kinds of things, and that's really the low-hanging fruit in terms of plain language, is that stuff where you really are specifically talking to a particular audience about what it is they have to do, and there's lots of work that we can spend the next while on there. The second issue is that's dealt with in the Dash 1 Amendment is the authority for Administrative Services Department to adopt administrative rules for implementing this statute. And in particular, the ability to define, I think the language in the bill is written documents produced by the agency for purposes of communicating with the public, giving them the ability to define what that means. I'll give you an example. Department of Transportation, you know, issues bid documents for building a bridge or a highway or some piece of infrastructure. There are going to be technical requirements and designs about the bridge. We want to make sure that, you know, we can clarify that's not the kind of a thing we're talking about where letters like the ones that you saw earlier, those kinds of things really are, and we think that'll help help us be able to implement the bill smoothly. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
First, I absolutely agree with you about that not being a low-hanging fruit, and we really need to prioritize. We can't do everything at once, obviously, and certainly we want the agencies to find those things which will be most effective in communicating with the public. Questions? Virginia Byer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Listening to some of the things you said, it just seems logical that if what you're doing is trying to do plain talk, you should be able to figure out pretty easily what you can do plain talk on and what, you know, what is requirements that you can't rewrite. So I'm not sure. I just been struggling a little bit with your concern about that being a problem. I think that should be very easily overcome.
Well, Chair Riley, Representative Byer, I think with the Dash 1 amendments, we don't have a concern.
Okay.
It allows the discretion to be able to make those determinations. The concern was in the original as drafted bill. Absolutely everything had to be done or could be interpreted as needing to be done to a plain language standard, and that would have been the concern. But that's with the Dash 1s, we don't have a concern on that point.
Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, first, how are we going to understand all those administrative rules we're going to be writing? Just kidding. Do you anticipate that there'll be any additional staffing or consultants or expense required to implement this correctly?
Chair Riley, Representative Thatcher, I've not seen what sorts of fiscal agencies might have generated so far. I didn't talk specifically about it, but part of the Dash 1 amendments deleted a much broader training requirement that would likely have involved a more significant fiscal impact statement. the ability to prioritize on a fairly indefinite timeline as the bill's currently constructed, I think, allows an agency, should allow an agency to be able to pace that work as it's able to do it within resources. But I can't say exhaustively that we've tried to pin down as we sit here today. Does someone have a fiscal issue that we've not anticipated?
Let me answer that question a little bit, if I can, Representative. Fiscal has informed me that they have, from the agencies, some significant fiscal, and although I don't believe them, I've asked permission from the Speaker to pass this to Ways and Means for further discussion about the cost, and I'll be testifying with Ways and Means to get this through. So, in answer to your question, that's where we are at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Jessica Adamson. Thank you for coming up to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jessica Adamson with Associated General Contractors. I'm also supposed to say that Jim Craven with the American Electronics Association thinks this is a wonderful bill. Unfortunately, he had to run out to a meeting, so he left me his proxy to also share with you. From AGC's perspective, we think this is a great bill. We do support the -1 amendments. It would take care of the concerns that we had about things like building codes, like bid specs and contract documents, that those in some cases can be a little clearer, and we certainly work on that quite a bit. But in a lot of cases, they're technical for a reason, and because it makes sense to us. It's plain language to us, just not to anybody else. So that said, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we think this is a great idea. We believe this will help our employers, certainly in a wide variety of areas, be able to be in compliance with the law easier because the language will be clearer on the instructions of what they need to be doing. And from a consumer standpoint, we believe this is a good bill, and would urge your adoption of the -1 amendment in the bill.
Thank you. Any questions of Ms. Adams? Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming up. Seeing no one else signed up to testify, is there anyone from the public who would like to testify on this? If not, I want to let the members of the committee know that in your packet there is testimony from not only Governor Gregoire, but also the Governor of Florida, Governor Crist, and among many other testimonies that we have, they've just been coming in from all over the country, and I really appreciate that, and I especially appreciate you, Dana, for coming down from Olympia. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2702, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2702.
Mr. Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2702.
Thank you. Representative Beyer moves the adoption of House Bill 2702-1 amendments. David March 9th, is there any discussion?
In keeping with the plain talk standards, good amendments should pass.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? The amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2702 as amended to the floor.
No, that's the right
one. Are we going?
Going.
With a due pass recommendation. Oh, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Not so plain language on that. Technical jargon. I apologize.
Representative Edwards moves House Bill 2702 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk, call roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Yes, aye.
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 Motion passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you all very much for coming. I'm going to close this committee on government accountability and information technology, and